Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Black women in the workplace. Why do some people think they're hard to work with? Are they passionate or angry? Expressive or obtuse? Defensive? Or just pointed? Are any of these descriptions true, or does it just depend on who you talk to? Well, joining me to navigate this touchy subject is Dr. Vanessa Weaver, career advisor and CEO of Alignment Strategies. Also, we're going to be talking to Dr. Terry Adams, professor of sociology and professor at Howard University, and Associate Dean of Research here at the university, and you, the listener. Uh-oh, there's a chuckle. It's already started. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at H Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Adams and Dr. Weaver. Thank you both for joining the conversation.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this important subject.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think I'm just going to step off and just
Are
let
you trying to play safe?
don't you think I need to?
So, I think you're trying to run for cover. Yes. I don't understand why that is.
I don't either. Like somebody throw me a life ring, a life raft or something. Look, let's be really honest, and I'll start with you, Dr. Weaver. Are black women in the workplace hard to deal with? Are they hard to work with?
Well, I don't think that you could categorize all black women as hard to deal with or hard to work with. I don't think that's fair. That becomes a stereotype. But what I can say to you is that we're terribly frustrated. When you really look at just the basic data around what's impacting us, it's like black women, first of all, earn like 62 cents for every dollar that white men earn, and we earn 62 cents for every 82 cents that women in general earn. And, many of us come to our careers. We're heavily invested in our careers. I don't care what level it is. We're invested in that career. We're ambitious. In fact, the data shows that black women have a higher propensity to ask for promotions, to ask for raises than other women and generally people in the organization. Yet 49% of black women feel that they don't get those raises. And a big part of that is that they feel like they're discriminated because they're black females. And I can tell you, having worked in Alignment Strategies and in this space for over 35 years, this data has continuously been a reality of our lives. So we're frustrated. We're frustrated at feeling misunderstood, feeling unappreciated, feeling that no matter how hard we work and how committed we are to our organizations, it doesn't always seem to be the same kind of return for us.
So if that is true, do you believe, Dr. Adams, that if we were to go by the numbers, by the data, that black women walk in the door expecting to be mistreated and underpaid, and so therefore come in the door ticked off?
No, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's a fair assessment. I think, everybody's different, and we all come in to any space with our own biases and lived experiences. So you bring that to wherever you go. But I think when you take on a new job or a new role, you're hoping for the best. So I don't think people start off with being frustrated. The frustration comes in when they see that they've been denied opportunity. So it's not something that's just innate. I happen to work in a space where it's predominantly women. I work for the dean for the graduate school. And you know, we're all happy and satisfied with our jobs, I would assume, for the most part. And so it's a really good working environment. I've worked in other environments that have been predominantly black and female, and it's been positive workspaces. So it's not an innate thing that people are just frustrated and they act out. It's just, it's because of a particular kind of experience.
So, right. So then let me ask you this. Where is this coming from? Where do these, because this isn't new. This conversation didn't just pop up today. I'll give you some recent examples when back in 2008, when Barack Obama was running for president, and his wife, you know, Michelle Obama, was accused of being an angry black woman. Okay. And then on the other hand, we saw when Kamala Harris was running for vice president and she was debating Mike Pence, you know, she handled Mike Pence for, you know, for all accounts, but she walked a very fine line from being, you know, pointed, and, you know, some of the same kind of vigor that she used in the Senate when questioning a Supreme Court nominees, for mm-hmm. example.
Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Men could have used that same kind of vigor and not been accused of being angry. So
absolutely.
Where is that coming from?
I think it's the stereotypes of the mammy, the Jezebel, and, you know, I could go on, that still are with us today, that black women are viewed through a different kind of lens. And
absolutely.
So, any sense of standing up for yourself is deemed to be aggressive. It's not aggression. It's just speaking up and speaking out for what you should be doing.
And you know, the point, and it doesn't matter what level you are in an organization. You can, you know, you could be at any level doing all kind of jobs, and to Dr. Adams' point, you get framed with that type of, you get framed in that kind of way. For example, just last week, our first lady, Cora Master-Berry, was called in the press as being aggressive and difficult to work with, and therefore she wasn't recommended for a position on the Commission of the Arts. And I was astounded. And I shouldn't have been. Now why am I astounded by that? But I thought, in a city that has a history of black women achieving and being successful in the media and academic, and with the contributions that Cora Master-Berry has made, that I thought at least that would have buffered her from being categorized that way. Yeah. And yet it didn't. And so we come to this space wanting and hoping for the best, because I think, or at least my experience has shown, and I've worked in this space for over 35 years, that black women are perennial optimists, you know, mm-hmm. in spite of all of the obstacles that we faced, and there have been tremendous obstacles, we still approach these jobs with the hope and the aspiration to be successful. And I think some of the fact that that is often very challenging for us to achieve leads to a lot of the frustration. And I think, Dr. Adams, you might agree that for black women, it's very difficult for us to ask for help. It's very mm-hmm. difficult for us to reach out and show a level of vulnerability. And as a result of that, we suffer in silence. I say often we're the walking mm-hmm. wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have no, you know, we have no safe places to go where we can work through and talk through our issues. And therefore, you know, we tend to be frustrated. And I can tell you, working in the diversity space, I have been in many situations where black women have been described as being very difficult.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about black women in the workplace. Are they difficult to work with? Are they passionate or are they angry? Is the answer to that question, does it depend on who you talk to? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So here's the thing that you touched on, Dr. Weaver, that I thought was really interesting. You're talking about safe space. Some black women find other black women difficult to work with. That is not a secret. That is a known issue, even anecdotally speaking. But even more broadly, are we looking at cultural differences between black women and white women, or black women and Asian women, or black women and other women, as far as, you know, how they were raised and the expectations that they bring to the workspace?
Well, when you say cultural issues, you mean in terms of how we express?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a better example. If you go to a white church, let's say a white church that is not evangelical, an evangelical church, just a white church, as opposed to a black Baptist church. White person from that church goes to a black church. Never been to a black church before, they're going to look around and say, oh, look at these people. They're jumping around and they're expressive and they're passionate. You know, come to my church, they're holding it. They got their hands on their chest. Oh, my goodness, what's going on? Black person comes to their church and they may say, well, you know, this church is boring. It doesn't necessarily mean that they don't both believe, but culturally, there is a difference. And that, it's the same thing, I would imagine, for black households versus, you know, white households, particularly for black women who may be the only black woman in the room.
Yeah, but you know, people know how to code switch, right?
Do they?
I think they do, and I don't think that, you know, we're speaking in general, you know, general terms now, and so not everybody's going to act the same way, so there's no one way of describing how quote-unquote black women act. But I think in the main we do a lot of code switching, and you know, I go to a predominantly black church, but it's the kind of church where we don't do like what the traditional Baptist churches do, so it's not one way of behaving in any kind of space, I would argue. And I definitely would say that I don't want anybody to walk away from this conversation thinking that black women have attitudes and we bring them to work. I just want to dismiss that myth in any way possible. Dr. Weaver?
So if that is the case, if what you say is true, then where does this come from? Because this is not just a complaint about white folks and, you know, complaining about black women, because there are some black women who complain about black women.
Go ahead, Dr. Weaver. Sorry.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Dr. Adams, you mentioned earlier that there are a lot of stereotypes out there and people view certain behaviors through lens of bias. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about, like, for my dissertation, I was interested in exploring how black young girls and black boys dealt with depression and also social competence. And what I saw in my research was that very early, young black girls were socialized to speak their truth, you know, to have a point of view and to say it. And when you go into the workplace, we take that ability and that skill to speak truth, to share a point of view in very candid ways. And sometimes it's not expressed in the way that, you know, other cultures might express disagreement or different points of view. And that gets labeled and characterized as being aggressive and angry.
That's the point that I was making.
Yeah, and I'm saying, though, that the onus of that
is often placed on black women to explain and make others comfortable around the way we express our disagreement of point of view. And I would tell you that in one client company that we worked, they found that when they were evaluating the best team leaders, they found that the black women who were leading teams were perceived as much better leaders because they encouraged their people to be more direct and upfront and honest about their points of view around a particular project, and that they didn't have to code switch, nor were they expecting others to code switch so that they can make people feel comfortable or not even represent the truth in terms of what was happening in the business.
Hold on now, because you 2 minutes ago you said, well, everybody code switches, but now you said the best leaders don't code switch now.
I'm sorry, I got them confused.
You know,
so what I mean by that is I don't necessarily think we tone down what we want to say or how we want to, what we intend to express, but maybe the way we express things is differently. So when I'm talking with family members or friends I grew up with, my way of expressing myself is probably pretty much the same as I'm talking right now. But and the way I talk in other spaces is pretty much the same. Well, you might use slang. You might say things in a funny way. You know, that's what I mean about code switching. I don't mean you turn your personality off or your intention behind what you have to share with people. And I do think that, you know, that many of us bring our passions to the workplace. So what could be described, you know, I would describe as, you know, I'm a passionate person. Somebody else looking at how I'm expressing myself would say I'm angry. It's not anger. It's like it's passion. Yeah. And I think the examples you gave, you know, at the top are prime examples of that. Mm. You know, our vice president is passionate about things. She's not angry. She's passionate.
Yeah, and what we show is confidence.
Absolutely.
And the willingness to speak our truth often is often misunderstood and misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, you know, this whole notion of code switching, I do know that we have to, as black women, we have to develop, I think it's important for us to develop a number of ways of responding and interacting with various kind of people, including black men.
I need to talk about that, and I have to go to the phone lines. I've got to go to the phone lines, but I got to take a break. Brian calling from Baltimore, we're going to talk to you. Lois calling from Silver Spring, we're going to talk to you as well. Please do not hang up. I know it's hard to get through. Lines are busy, but please keep trying. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2. The app, download it on your smartphone so that you can hear the program in its entirety. And don't forget, also on 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about black women in the workplace. Are they difficult to deal with, or are they just passionate? Are they angry, or are they just standing up for themselves? Does it really depend on who you talk to? My guests are Dr. Vanessa Weaver, career advisor and CEO of Alignment Strategies. Also, Dr. Terry Adams, professor of sociology at Howard University and also associate dean of research here. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brian calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Brian. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller, actually, and I wanted to I was compelled to call in because I disagree with the basic premise of your show, as my 35 years in the public sector has taught me. I find that black women are the easiest to work with in the workplace. I find that black women are usually the most competent people to work with, the most capable people, most agreeable people, whether you're talking about management or if you're talking about mechanics, you know, the people who do the actual work. I think a better question would be, are Caucasian women more difficult to work with? That's been my experience, is that when you bring in those, you know, some of the points that you've made about agreeability or angriness, or, you know, I experienced that in my 35 years more so from white women than white managers or workers. You know, I experienced that more from Caucasian women than from black women. That's my view.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for your opinion. Let's go to Lois calling from Silver Spring. Lois, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Can you hear me?
I most certainly can. Go right ahead.
Great. I'd like to thank the doctors, both doctors, Weaver, and I'm sorry I missed the other person.
Dr. Adams.
Adams, thank you. Thank you very much for your points. I believe it depends. The overall answer to your questions, it depends. It depends on the environment that women find themselves in. It depends on the interaction that they have to deal with. It depends on a lot of different things, whether they're perceived in one way or another. First, the perception of being angry is a diversion. A diversion from reality.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that?
Yeah, what is that? What is that? You said diversion. Yeah, but clarify that. Diversion from what? For what?
It is an attempt to blindside the effectiveness of black women. Black women hone their tradecraft and should continue to hone their tradecraft. And as Dr. Adams so eloquently stated, need to know how to utilize their verbal skills and communication skills, written communication skills, to deal with any situation they find themselves in. Because overall, their tradecraft, which is what they do, their occupation, what they're good at, is there. It's in place. What they have to deal with is people that may be less competent than them, that use these diversions to shed a different light on what's really happening, so that the light's not shed on their incompetence, it's pushed out on the black woman. So, I mean, I've experienced this most of my career, and I've ignored it, because you will never hear anyone use the word assertive about a black woman. We are assertive. Assertive. We do the same thing white men do, black men do, but they say we're angry when we do it. I mean, it doesn't matter. Everybody has passion. Everybody, I mean, it just depends on how you express it. But
yeah, not everybody.
Okay, well, I'm not sure where you've been, sir.
Yeah, not everybody has passion. I see some slugs, okay. But go ahead. I've seen some slugs now. Not everybody is passionate. They're like, okay, yeah. Well,
slug at that, okay. A men or slugs?
Both. But go ahead. Go ahead. Let's be clear. Not everybody is passionate about their jobs. It's 4:59. Let me just mosey on out of here. But go right ahead.
You're wrong.
Yeah, he knows he's wrong, but that's okay. I've heard you divert the practical arguments that these two doctors have presented to add in that divisive and diversion that people want to put in there. You call it stereotype, it doesn't matter. But the bottom line is, you have to hone your tradecraft so that you're good at all times. You have to be on point all the time. All my life, when I get up in the morning, I put on my shield, I put on my armor, and I go out to battle.
Okay.
What am I battling for? I'm battling for the right to be in the room. Hmm. I'm battling for the right to have a voice. Mm-hmm. That's what black women do all the time. I don't care what your occupation is, that's what you're battling, because there's a lot of people trying to be in the same place. So you have to look at number game, number one.
Okay, Lois, I got to let you go, because I've got to take some more phone calls. But I appreciate your passion and your input. And I hope that you are never a slug in this conversation or anything. But thank you so much. I appreciate you giving me some input. Let me go to Perry calling from Virginia. Perry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, man. Wow.
Go ahead.
The thing that bothers me is the emotion and the way the person delivers the message on the volume that they speak to another person.
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's hard to work with us. Not that it's just women, but if there's a person that's at a job, say we're the same background, race, and they're there first, and then you come along. So they're critiquing you because they think you make it look bad, same way women do. If women see you doing worse and she's the first person there, she's hard to get along with. Yeah, but you have to understand, like you said, people are not passionate about work. They just go because they need the money. A lot of people don't have skills that they can actually do without reporting to a job. There's not many entrepreneurs. But it's hard to work with people in general. But when you use the color tone, black women, black men, white men, white, to me, that puts us at a disadvantage. We should all Americans. Hmm. It's hard to work with everybody unless you're passionate and good at your craft and you enjoy it. Then you can look at everybody's point of view and deliver without so much negative connotation. The sister was passionate.
Mm-hmm.
The last part, she was passionate.
Lois,
but
yes.
She kind of left the answer. I think everybody's hard to work with. It's not just the color tone women.
Well,
it's not our sisters, and it's not Americans.
Okay.
It's hard to work with everybody if you come to a job and then they're there before you.
I don't necessarily agree with that, Perry. I don't think that everybody's hard to work with. I don't agree with that at all, unless you're the person who's hard to work with, or, you know, you. But I don't know. I just don't agree with that. But thank you so much. So let me, I want to go back to this issue, though, because I think, anecdotally speaking, and Dr. Reaver, and Dr. Adams, but I'd specifically reference Dr. Weaver. You said yourself, you've spent 35 years in this business. You've been in the boardrooms and at every level of, you know, of corporate America. I think it would be disingenuous to say that every black woman that you've come in contact with has been pristine in her comportment on the job. And that there are some that have been difficult to, you know, to work with. And I would venture to say that code switching goes beyond just language. Code switching also goes to expression, tone, and all of that.
But and your point is what though?
My point is that at some point, and we're talking, and this could be applicable to black men too, but we're not talking about black men tonight. We're talking about specifically black women. That at some point, I think that there does need to be some navel gazing, because if somebody comes to you and you've been on this program enough to. Speaking from the mentor space, mm-hmm. to have pulled up another person that you were mentoring, mm-hmm. and, you know, pulled them around the corner in the hallway and say, after the meeting, I think the next time you should not say this or do this, or maybe the better way to do this is this, so that you don't find yourself boxed in a corner, mm-hmm. and that they may or may not take constructive criticism well. They may or may not take advice well. And
well,
so go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm not disagreeing, but I don't think that that's unique to just black women. I can name black men who acted like that, white women who acted like that, Asian women and Latina women.
I get it, but I don't want to dilute the conversation with black men and everyone else.
Okay. But I want you to think about it. But this is where I agree with you, that when you look at the preponderance of what black women have to deal with in terms of the inequality, so the lack of equity in the workplace, we are frustrated. And I have encountered some black women who are just so angry, you know, because they feel like they've had to deal with this time and time again, or in fact they're dealing with it and have had no outlet. And so it's just, you know, it's just like boiling up inside of them.
And I think it's important for organizations and for people to step back and say, what kind of culture are we creating that's driving this kind of reaction? And I think it's also important to give some straight, to have straight talk and give straight feedback to Black women or anybody, but particularly since we're talking about Black women, when you see them operating in that space, and there are different ways that they can respond and react. And what I find is that so often Black women don't get that kind of coaching and feedback and straight talk in a way that allows for them to just kind of take it in, reflect on it, and try some new behaviors. Because I do think some of this has to be addressed. And I wanted to say one other point, is that when you have a lot of stress and you feel you've been treated unfairly and mm-hmm. you have all these dreams and aspirations and you see just, you know, you don't see a way that you're going to be able to make that happen, you know, versus just keeping it in, I would encourage Black women to find a coach or find someone to help them to kind of sort through and identify some other ways of trying to strategize to get what they want. So, and a lot of times we suffer in silence. I mean, you know, I talked about, you know, many of us are the walking wounded.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that brings me to the other side of the coin, Dr. Weaver and Dr. Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the cultural point that I'm saying. In that room, if a Dr. Adams or a Dr. Weaver, under the premise that you just shared with us, Dr. Weaver, if I see that passionate expression because of all of that other stuff that I recognize culturally, and I see the, you know, the passion slash a little bit of frustration, from my perspective, you know, I'm like, okay. Because, you know, I recognize it and it doesn't bother me. But there may be those who are not of my culture, not of my skin tone, who may be aware of the stereotype and they may say, oh, well, there it is.
Yeah, but, you know, well, it provides an opportunity, though.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Dr. Adams, if you can.
And please. I think it depends on how it's expressed. So not everyone who's frustrated in a work environment, not every Black woman, let me say, is going to express that frustration the same way. You mm-hmm. might be upfront and more likely to speak your mind, but you might not say it in a way that, you know, stereotypically, you know, I don't even want to use the euphemism that's used, but you don't want to. Not everybody expresses themselves in a way where they are going to be deemed to be. Oh God, I don't even know how to say it without saying it.
The angry Black female.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to be careful not to stereotype ourselves.
Right.
But I do, and also we have to be aware that we are impacted by stereotypes. So just mm-hmm. like there are white women who clutch their purses when a Black man walks down the street, there are Black women who do that too. Just like there are whites who might perceive Black women as being angry and aggressive, there are Black people who are going to do that too, because we are not immune to the stereotypes. So sometimes we have to talk ourselves out of what society has implanted in our own minds to really give our people a chance. And I think it's also important to recognize that people bring a different spirit to a job depending on the nature of the job. So if you're working in retail, you're not invested in the store. You're not necessarily going to build a career at a retail store unless you're the manager. You have aspirations in that way. So how you respond, it's going to be different than somebody who's in the boardroom. You see what I'm saying? Because you're not invested the same. So the way you express yourself, you might not be checking yourself and checking how you express yourself. I'm not
Dr. Weaver, help me here because I'm not saying it properly.
Well, before we go back to our resident sage, Dr. Weaver.
All right. I'll take that.
Well, you wear it well. Let's find out what Michelle from Maryland has to say. Michelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you so much. And to Dr. Weaver, and is it Dr. Adams?
Yes.
Okay, very good. And everyone else? Yeah, I've been listening for a little while, and I just kind of wanted to touch on a couple of things that I've heard. I've been in the workforce for, I would say, over 25 years of my life, and I'm grateful for that. And I've been in corporate, so I've been, like, in the banking and financial industry. But a few things that were mentioned was, you know, sometimes African-American women can come in kind of angry because for whatever reasons, I personally think that we don't put a lot of accountability and responsibility on the companies. Sometimes companies, they're not very receptive to, like, work-life balance, right? And so sometimes it's very frustrating to be in your personal life and you have a lot of things going on and then you have obligations at work. And oftentimes, African-American women, we really don't speak up. We don't really know how to, because we can be very demanding, but it can be very professional, very tactful, and ethical. And I think sometimes African-American women don't know how to approach, like, corporate or wherever you're working, and it can't come across. Because if you approach it like to say, oh, this is a work-life balance, it's for my mental health. This is important that I come in here healthy and things like that. I think we, like you said, you know, we come in angry and it's okay for you. You're probably very good about working with people of all sorts, but not everyone is, you know, and it's a lack of, like, training, you know. So I think that a lot of this should be put on the companies, you know, to help us. But we also have to kind of know how to approach things.
I would love to respond to that. I mean,
yeah, please go ahead.
I absolutely agree with what you say, because when I started my career, I remember in Cincinnati. In fact, I was at Procter & Gamble, and I didn't really understand how white men thought. You know what I mean? How they languished it, and so I would be in situations where it was a fight, and I didn't even know I was in a fight because I was used to fighting culturally a different way. And I'm sitting in there, and they will say something like, "Well, you know, I really have a strong, I really have a different point of view about that, and I need to really express it in a way that you really understand fully what I'm saying." And so, to me, that was somebody who had a strong point of view. But it took a white male, my white male mentor, to tell me that this is the way that white men fight. You know, these are the buzzwords. These are the cues and the signals around the fact that you're in a battle. And I really appreciated that because it expanded my lens around understanding the other diversity and the other differences around how people show up. And I think that's really important for organizations to make an investment in ensuring that people of color, that women and other people of color understand what is the informal system in an organization. You know, what are the informal networks? How do things really operate? And what are the conversations that they're having about you in places that you would never be in to hear them? And it was interesting because it was this incredible research, and I would ask everybody to go on the internet and pull it down. It's by a Lean In organization. It's called The State of Black Women in Corporate America, and what they said in there is that 80% of white men and white women perceive themselves as being very strong allies to people of color. Yet only 26% of black women indicated that whites in organizations were allies to them. And then they went on to do some research to find out that of this 80% plus of white men and women who perceive themselves as strong allies to blacks in the organization and other people of color, they could be Indian, they could be Persian, they could be Latina. They found out that only 40% had ever spoken up against a racist or biased kind of action that they observed.
And so to our caller's point, I think it's a tremendous opportunity for organizations to train white men and white women how to put voice and speak out against biased kinds of behaviors that they're observing, so that the onus and responsibility isn't just on the people who are being directly experiencing it.
But Dr. Weaver, the Procter and Gamble example that you just cited makes my point about the differences in culture. Because you said you did not know that that's how white men fight, because that's not how you fought.
Correct.
And there was a bright red line between the culture of fighting that you understood, even in a workspace, and the culture of fighting that they understood, and it took someone to, and that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that one person's thought that a black woman may be expressing anger is another person's view that she is just passionate, or that she simply disagrees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, that when she starts raising her voice and yelling and slamming doors, okay, that's a different thing. And yeah, we know.
You know, they're all extreme behaviors, right?
Disagreeing?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So what, I mean, no matter what your race or gender is, but the point that I was trying to make in that story, Harold, is this, that whites in the organization have a responsibility, number one, to share what they know and to teach and educate people of color. But they also have a responsibility to teach and educate their own. And they have a big mm-hmm. responsibility to do that. And so if I'm culturally aware of the different ways that black women express point of views and things like that, and black men or Latino women or Asian women, then when I hear one of my white colleagues who are making biased comments or who are engaged in behaviors that could affect that person, then I have a responsibility to speak up, and I have a responsibility to also educate them on the different ways of different cultures. It's not just about black people having to adopt to just mm-hmm. to a complete white culture, but it's about all of us understanding what are the diversity dimensions that we bring and learning how to work through that.
Yeah, but let me say this about that, and I want Dr. Adams to chime in, because you just reminded me about something that is very, very clear, because if other cultures may say something that may be culturally insensitive, and you as a black woman speaks up, you may be thinking that it is a teachable moment. But on the other side of that fence, they may be saying, yeah, that you are ticked off because you are insulted. And there's the rub. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying, and you know, we can talk about black women, but I can speak from my own experience about something so simple as where do you want to go on vacation, being the only black person in the room, and all the white folks that, you know, the white woman who has an Irish last name talking about, I want to go to Ireland, and the white guy who has a German last name wanting to go to Germany, and me, you know, Fisher having a, you know, obviously Fisher is an African black name. And I want to go to Africa, and everybody says, Africa, why you want to go to Africa? Well, here's the lesson. Okay, and then I have to give them the black history lesson to understand, hey, look at me and look at you, because you don't understand from whence you cometh. But this mm-hmm. is why. And so and that's what I mean. But anyway, Michelle, thank you so much. Let's go to Jimmy calling from D.C. Jimmy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jimmy, are you there? Go right ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, please. Go right ahead quickly.
Okay. Black women of power, not all, but some. They are ruthless.
I can barely hear you, Jimmy. You sound muffled. Jimmy, you sound like you're speaking through a mask.
Okay.
Okay, don't go there.
He said black women of power are ruthless, is what he said.
In some cases, yeah. I'm speaking out about the U.S. Postal Service in the DMV.
Okay, let's not get into specifics, but just go right ahead.
Okay, okay. Now, you take a younger black female woman, single, trying to take care of their kids, woman of power that's been in an establishment for a minute, they make it hard for the younger one. Or they don't give them the hours so they can pay their bills. That's why I say they're ruthless. Or they're trying to force them out if they don't like them or something like that. If somebody's coming to work every day and wants to work, and then you have a woman that's up the rankings, just because they might not like you, they want to try to force you out to the point where, okay, well, I'm not going to give them the hours so they can't pay their bills, so they can quit. Why do they do that?
Dr. Adams, real quick, because I only have a few minutes. I'd like for you to kind of respond to that, please.
I'm not sure how to answer it either, but I would say, you know, everybody's different. So that's not a black woman thing. That's a person.
Yeah, I agree with you.
In a particular position who's acting potentially.
Hold on, Jimmy, hold on. Let Dr. Adams finish because I'm low on time. Go right ahead, Dr. Adams, please.
It's not a black woman thing. I have mentioned earlier at the top of the show that I've worked with two very strong black female leaders who were really good. The one I'm working for right now is excellent, and the one I worked for in the past was great as well. And they did not bring any of what you just described to the workplace. So you can't, it's not a black woman thing. It is a case-by-case kind of situation. And unfortunately, what you're describing sounds like a hostile work environment, but it's not all black women. And I think it's important to be clear about that, particularly as African-Americans. We cannot have bias against our own kind, nor should we be trying to really breathe life into stereotypes. We need to be in the business about dismissing stereotypes and really understanding who we are and, you know, what we bring to the table.
I am out of time. Jimmy, thank you so much for sharing with us. I will say, and to Dr. Adams' point, I don't equate anger with strength. You can be strong and you can be as zen and as serene as, you know, a glass top pond.
Absolutely.
You know, Dr. Vanessa Weaver, our resident sage, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Terry Adams, thank you so much for talking to us as well. Good to talk to you again. It's been a minute.
Absolutely. Yeah,
thank you for this topic. It's an important one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, November 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.